Okay, it looks like it's 8:30, and so we will call this meeting to order. Welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday, March 9th, Board of Forestry virtual meeting. We are live streaming this meeting on YouTube, and to make sure our viewers online can follow along with today's virtual meeting, I'll go over some housekeeping tips to keep us all on track. Everyone participating or presenting, please silence your cell phones and limit background noises. Remember to use the mute feature when you are not speaking and disable your video when not presenting or part of the discussion. For the record, we ask all presenters, guest speakers, board members, and members of the public to state their names for those listening online. If you experience technical issues, use the chat function on Zoom to connect with ODF hosts in Salem during the meeting. For those joining us online, I'll remind everyone of our general order of operations. After an item is introduced, I'll invite the presenters to begin. For board members, if you have clarifying questions, please use the raise hand function and I'll call on you. Presenters, we will do our best to ask questions one at a time. After a presentation, we will open up the floor for board discussion and additional questions. We offer real-time public testimony under item one, where the public can comment on items on and off the agenda. At the end of board comments, we will begin our public comment period. Commenters will have 3 minutes to testify. We have three decision items in front of the board today. Item number three, which is the 2022-2024 board work plan decision for forest resources. Item number four, wildland urban interface and wildlife wildfire risk mapping discussion, and item number six, endangered species management plan. Time for live public comment is also available for these items. In the general order of operations for a decision item, the board will be presented with information with a staff recommendation. The board can ask clarifying questions on the topic before we invite members of the public to provide comments. Board members can follow up can ask follow-up questions from the presenters before the board sets forth a motion for discussion and vote. We will use a roundtable approach for the voting process, which seems to work well at our previous meetings. Additionally, members of the public, we ask that if you would like to submit written testimony for this meeting, meeting's agenda items, and enter it into the record, please send in your comments by March 23rd. This will help in the preparation of our board's meeting minutes. With that, any questions? Okay, if none, I'll perform a roll call to confirm a quorum can be met for today's items. Liz Akpoa?
Present.
Okay, Carla Chambers?
Here.
Ben Doimley?
Here.
Chandra Ferrari?
Here.
Joe Justice?
Here.
Brenda McComb?
Here.
And myself, Jim Kelly, we're all here. Great. Okay, moving on to the consent agenda items. If there's no comments or suggestions, then I would seek a motion to accept items A through L.
Jim, I have a comment.
I see you've got a hand up. Brenda, go ahead.
Thank you, Jim. Brenda McComb for the record. I'm wondering if we might be able to pull out the legislative concepts piece for the consent agenda. It just strikes me that it's there's some opportunities here that I'm not sure the board has had a good chance to discuss. And if I'm missing something, my sincere apologies to board and staff. But I was surprised that there were no legislative concepts listed for fire protection or state forests, and state forests would seem to benefit from some deeper thought about how to structure state forest division to be more stable financially, especially given the fluctuations in the log market.
Maybe Cal or Kate could comment on our process here. Is this at this point supposed to be a final list, or is this appropriate time for to be giving further input.
Well, I think given the timing, I think we still have some time to bring forward some legislative concepts to the board if they would like to explore some areas, Jim. And I understand Brenda's talking about perhaps stabilizing the funding for state lands, forest lands.
Yeah, that was my, thank you, Cal. That was my initial reaction. I just was surprised to see none. I mean, there is a POP that deals with recreation and education piece, but I didn't see anything that would help stabilize the state forest financial situation as a legislative concept.
Yeah, and then also under fire, what are you thinking there?
Well, I don't have any specific ideas for that one. You know, a lot has been done already, and maybe there's been sufficient legislative work done on fire issues, but given the gravity of the issue, it just caught my attention that there was nothing presented.
Carla, you've got your hand up.
Yes, just a quick on a different topic. On the item number D, the Elliott Forest decertification, just a technical question. You know, for a number of years, I managed lands at Oregon State, and, you know, decisions change over time. And I'm just that is a reversible decision if OSU should make a different decision at some point in the future. Is that correct? You can recertify. If we can decertify, I assume we can recertify. Is that true?
Go ahead, Cal. I can see you raising your hand.
I am not sure about that, but I would suspect yes, but go ahead, Kate.
It would be at the working with the land board in the direction of the state lands of what they would want to do there with their lands. We've also got Justin Buttress here who's been working on this more to provide some input. But yes, you know, we've gone through certification of lands and decertification of lands over the years. Okay. It has been changed.
Thank you.
Okay, Brenda, you still have your hand up. Is that?
Oops, sorry, Jim.
Oh, okay. You still have your hand up, so I was.
Got it, yep.
All right, I'm going to suggest that we go ahead with the understanding that this is not necessarily a complete and final list. Some things could be added, as Brenda suggests, that we go ahead and approve the consent agenda. Is that workable for everyone?
I would so move. This is Board Member Chambers. I would so move approval of the consent agenda.
Okay.
Go ahead. I'll go ahead and second, Jim. This is Joe Justice.
Great. All right. So we have a motion and a second. And so we are going to approve the consent agenda. I'm going to do a roll call for the record. Liz?
Yes.
All right. Carla?
Yes.
Ben?
Yes.
Chandra?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Linda?
Yes.
And I am a yes as well. All right. Thank you very much. Okay, we're going to move on to our let me find myself here on the page here. To item one, state forester and board member comments. And so I'd like to welcome our state forester, Cal Mukamoto, to begin with your opening comments.
Thank you, Chair Kelly. I appreciate that. Some opening comments. The short session of the Oregon legislature just ended. While short sessions involve far fewer bills on the table than full sessions, there are always several that we end up tracking closely because of their nexus to the work we do. The key bills coming out of this session for ODF were SB 1501, which codified the negotiated terms of the private forest accord. The bill comes with more than $16.6 million and nearly 60 positions for ODF for implementation of this legislation. SB 1502 created a tax credit for small landowners for riparian areas not harvested. The tax credit will remain until completely spent by landowner or their descendants. SB 1501 included a number of rulemaking requirements for the Board of Forestry, including to adopt the terms of the accord, to require notification filing when forest operations are complete, regarding tethered logging and post-harvest disturbances, to describe the role of the new statutorily established adaptive management program committee and independent research and science team. The board will also be responsible for appointing the initial members of both groups. The bill also requires the board to prepare and submit Habitat Conservation Plan, HCP, to the National Marine Fisheries Service and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service by December 31, 2022. The department did receive hiring to hire a contractor to ensure this work can be completed by the end of the year. You'll hear more about the PFA from folks who were instrumental in developing the PFA, and from the department about the changes in the board's work plan for the Forest Resource Division to accomplish this work. And additionally, HB 4055 addressed the forest products harvest tax rate that were left on the table at the end of the 2021 session. HB 4087 granted news media access to scenes of wildfire and natural disasters. And ODF was part of the work group and helped reshape the concept after it died in committee during 2021 session, and will remain involved developing of training and credentialing criteria included in the bill language, protect the safety of our firefighters, preserve the integrity of fire investigations, and maintain the safety and effectiveness of our firefighting operations. HB 5202 was the budget bill that included reimbursement of the state's portion of the 2021 fire costs, which was $46.3 million. It also appropriated $50 million in general funds to the emergency board that can be allocated to the department to address cash flow needs through the end of the biennium. Related to the topic of department cash flow issues and concerns, as you all know, I recently convened the Emergency Fire Funding Task Force. The task force has met twice and is working to develop a recommendation for sustainable funding system for emergency fire costs that doesn't depend upon the department's budgeted operational needs. Chair Kelly is co-chairing the task force, and board member Chambers is a member. Also, we have Brennan Geralt from the Emergency Fire Cost Committee, who is also co-chairing. We appreciate his service. Their recommendation will help inform the department's development of an emergency fire funding fix proposal for 2023 legislative session. That proposal will come before this board for deliberation and decision in June, with the department other legislative policy and budget asks for 2023. The board will have a chance to hear from anyone interested in providing input on this topic through its standing public comment process. Oregonians or representatives of our various stakeholder groups will be able to provide you with input either in writing in advance of your deliberations, or it's in person during the June meeting, so you'll have the opportunity to receive and consider what they have to say prior to making your decision. Progress also continues on the department's two priority implementation efforts related to operationalizing Senate Bill 762 and MGO finance-related recommendations. You'll hear more about efforts related to Senate Bill 762 during today's meeting, so I'll just provide a high-level summary of key milestones achieved since January's board meeting. ODF received 19 proposals requesting approximately $36 million in funding for landscape resiliency program grants. The $20 million available was awarded to 9 landscape-scale projects throughout the state in areas at high risk of wildfire. These projects plan to treat over 156,000 acres and bring over $15 million of matching funds. Grant agreements are being finalized and project work will begin in the spring. All project work covered by these grants must be completed by June 30th, 2023. The legislature also provided $5 million in general fund for hazardous reduction work on smaller properties through the small forest land and FireWise community grants. The statewide wildfire risk mapping rule drafting process concluded last month. Rulemaking advisory committee members, OSU staff, and ODF staff met for more than 60 hours between August and February to create the rule package you'll hear about in item four on today's agenda. If the board chooses to move forward with rulemaking, the department will file with the Secretary of State's office and hold public hearings. We will bring the results of these hearings back to the board in June for a decision on whether to adopt the rules. The board is required to complete the rulemaking by June 30th, 2022. OSU has the same timeline to complete their map and development work. As for MGL recommendations, our January update to the board was followed by a presentation to the Joint Ways and Means Committee, Subcommittee on Natural Resources. Kudos to Sabrina Perez, who did a fantastic job presenting our work to date, along with Leah Cochran from MGO. And thank you, Board Member Chambers, for joining us for that presentation, providing the committees with some very valuable insights. As of today, we've successfully implemented four of the 28 recommendations, and staff are currently working on 14 others. We are still confident in our ability to meet the legislators' deadline expectations. A key recommendation we are working on now is number 16, relating to development of an agency policy on financial oversight, which you'll hear about our concept in later today. So with that, I'm very happy to also introduce our new representative from the EQC. As we all know, last year, Commissioner Wade Mosby stepped down from his position on the EQC. And so we're very happy. We really appreciate, I want to just express a strong appreciation from the department for his continuing to be the liaison from EQC to, or DEQ to the Board of Forestry. But I'm also very happy today to introduce Commissioner Amy Slusher. You know, Amy is on the Environmental Quality Commission and is the EQC liaison to the Board of Forestry. Her EQC term began on November 18th, 2021. She is an attorney with the Green Energy Institute at the Lewis and Clark Law School, specializing in climate and energy law and policy. Amy is also married to a forester and has some experience with forest law, water law, and forest-related climate policy, all of which spurred her interest in serving as the EQC liaison to the Board of Forestry. I wish to say welcome, Amy. Amy, do you want to say anything to the board?
Hi, everybody. I'm just really excited to work with all of you. And just excited to be here. Thanks.
Thank you, Amy. Chair Kelly?
Okay, thank you, Cal, and welcome, Amy. I look forward to working with you. Board members, do any of you have comments that you'd like to provide at this point on any subject? Any board member comments? Okay, I'm not hearing any. I just would want to comment on one kind of housekeeping issue. After I became chair, one of the things we struggled with these meetings was the number of stakeholders who were providing comments and testimony very up to the last minute before board meeting. So we made some changes because it was really hard for the board to actually be able to have a chance to read and digest that information. And now I'm recognizing with this meeting that we have, we're kind of having a similar problem with a whole lot of stuff coming in real late or newly edited versions from staff. And so I haven't seen it quite like this ever before. So, and I know that creates challenges for all of you to deal with what comes in at the last minute. And I also know it creates a big challenge for Hillary and her staff. So I just sort of recognized this and thought about it yesterday. I will work with Hillary and with Cal and leadership. I think we're going to just have to put our foot down and create some rules. I really think we need to have board books that go out that are as complete as possible, and that you guys all have that information, not just before the board meeting, but before your pre-board meeting. So that's going to be my goal, and I'll work towards that goal. And I assume that that's music to all of your ears, I would guess. So Cal will be talking. All right. So we also have our opportunity here for the public to make general comments. Let's see here. Thanks. Thank you for those who signed up to provide testimony to the board today. We ask that everyone in the Zoom queue not exceed their allotted time of 3 minutes. I ask that before you start, you state your full name, the topic you are commenting on, any associated affiliation, if you are representing a group or organization. A timer will be provided to track your time, and each commenter will be called on by the board administrator. With limited time available, anyone who exceeds their time will be prompted to provide a closing statement and then muted. Okay, Hillary, are we ready to engage with the public comment?
Yes, Chair Kelly, we are ready to begin. Right. Today, we have three members of the public signed up for item one. Thank you all for joining us in the queue. To ensure we stay on track, I will list your names in a set order and just call on each of you to begin your testimony. You will also be shown a timer for 3 minutes. And when you see the timer run out, we just ask that you provide your closing statement. So for the order of item one, we will have Ms. Lieb, Mr. Brownscombe, then Ms. Astor. So Ms. Lieb, can you please be on deck? I will get your timer ready. Lieb, feel free to begin.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Heidi Leib, and I am the logging contract coordinator for Boise Cascade. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you today about the draft forest management goals and strategies. As you know, Boise Cascade has manufacturing facilities throughout the state forests region covered by the FMP. Boise relies on the state forest for our raw materials to operate our mills, which employ hundreds of rural Oregonians. As drafted, the goals and strategies are inordinately weighted towards facets of state forests that will impair ODF's ability to maximize revenue from these lands. There has clearly been more thought given to the environmental outcomes of greatest permanent value than there has been for the economic importance of our state forests. The goals and strategies related to environmental and recreation values need to be collapsed into fewer goals and strategies, or the economic goals need to be considerably expanded. An example of this are the carbon and climate change goals and strategies. Forests are a great place to capture carbon, but they're not a good place to store it in the long term. Carbon goals are better achieved by maintaining healthy forest stocks in combination with a robust timber harvest program that ensures carbon storage in long-lived wood products. Within this goal, there needs to be a strategy to increase locally sourced wood products to combat climate change by producing timber from state forests. Furthermore, selling carbon credits should not be the goal or the strategy of state forests. These credits produce no jobs and no environmental benefits for Oregon communities. Thus, the social cost associated with both reduced harvest and increased risk of wildfire overshadow any perceived benefit. The timber production goal, as written, would allow an extremely low amount of harvested wood fiber to satisfy this goal. It should include some form of target for timber production. This could be done using terms such as maximizing, optimizing, or at least providing sufficient levels to meet revenue goals. At a minimum, the financial viability of the agency should be an obvious goal of the state forest program. Ideally, the department would concern themselves with their fiduciary responsibility to the forest trust land counties by maximizing the financial return for the local counties and taxing districts. Over 60,000 Oregonians work in forest occupations that pay a living wage that is 3% higher than that state average. Many of those workers provide firefighting force that is present in the forest every day. By concentrating on goals other than timber harvest and economics, you will reduce the economic well-being of state and reduce the firefighting force drastically. The ODF needs to rethink and rewrite this plan and place more emphasis on harvest and economic criteria. In its current state, it does not serve Oregonians. It will especially cause more hardship for rural communities. It will raise the price of affordable housing, and it will actually store less carbon over the long run. Thank you for this opportunity to comment today, and I look forward to more timber revenue-based strategies in the FMP.
Thank you, Heidi, and apologies for mispronouncing your last name.
Oh, that's okay. I'm used to it. Thank you.
Thank you. Up next is Mr. Brownscombe. Ready when you are.
Okay. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, loud and clear.
Okay. Thanks, Hillary. Chair Kelly and members of the board, State Forester Mukumoto, thank you for the record. My name is Brett Brownscombe, and I'm with the Wild Salmon Center. I wanted to comment on a couple things. One is the Forest Management Plan and the Habitat Conservation Plan ongoing work. There were, in your board materials, two references that I thought were noteworthy. One was the reference on this is the FMP board materials, to since the 2001 plan was adopted in 2010, it was revised to increase harvest to maximize or further improve financial performance. So that's noteworthy because the harvest has already increased and the department's been operating at the high end of the range since 2010. And there are concerns over that. The second is the board materials flag that since 2001, when the original FMP was adopted, it was always intended to be paired with a habitat conservation plan. And that hasn't happened yet. It's poised to happen. So I think it's just a good reminder that all along, the intent since 2000 has been to pair up an HCP and with the FMP. And in light of the Marvin Miolette materials on your agenda today, the habitat conservation plan needs to be meaningful. There were over 1,300 responses to the survey that the department did around the FMP strategies, and then three times that amount of individual comments in the survey comment form. So there's a ton of public interest in what's happening here. A lot of those comments are from climate and carbon advocates, drinking water advocates, and others. Those align, certainly those voices align with interests that Wild Salmon Center has around salmon and aquatic habitat and ecosystems. So carbon and drinking water and some of these other values, frankly, weren't part of the discussions that were happening in 2001 around the FMP and 2010, and they need to be integrated meaningfully now, and now's the time. The legislature just ended an historic short session, and I think that session for us reflects that the legislature is ready to do more work around how the state will meet climate and carbon objectives as well as its conservation objectives. And heading into next session, looking forward, and this is relevant to the conversation you all had and your consent agenda, we're happy to see that there are POPs related to recreation and education information, enhancing that program as well as climate and carbon. We were disappointed to see there's no robust thinking, it doesn't appear, around ledge concepts for the big need conversation around the business model for state forest lands. And that includes how the state is going to balance conservation pressures that are needed, timber needs, and rural community funding, and how the state finances rural community services. We think there's a big opportunity here, and we would encourage the board and state forester to step up and lead and work with the legislature, who we feel are ready for this. Thank you.
Thank you. Last up, Ms. Astor.
Yes, good morning, State Forester Mukumoto and Chair Kelly. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Amanda Astor. My pronouns are she, her, hers, and I'm the Forest Policy Manager for Associated Oregon Loggers. First, I will raise some of AOL's general thoughts about the forestry plan for or the forest management plan, excuse me, goals and strategies. It is AOL's opinion that any plan ODF develops should be able to be measured for success. AOL has a few suggestions to help reach measurable outcomes while maintaining flexibility. Generally, these include decadal and annual metrics with air allowances in either direction and the concept of indicators. More detailed information about these suggestions can be found in AOL's written comments. If the concept of indicators is not right for the FMP, then they may be right for the forestry plan for Oregon. It is AOL's opinion that the FPFO should look to achieve environmental goals while recognizing the importance and value of a healthy, economically competitive forest product sector in achieving the state's mitigation and restoration goals. A durable FPFO would seek to ensure forested landscapes are in an ecologically functioning and resilient condition while meeting the economic and social needs of present and future generations. The FPFO should include ecological goals while promoting rural economic development rather than choosing one over the other. Today, the board will further discuss revisions of the FPFO with a focus on including climate change and forest carbon into the plan. AOL believes community impacts and downstream effects to the overall timber industry should be assessed and recognized in the plan. AOL also believes this type of emphasis on climate change cannot come without an equal emphasis on wildfire. This should come in the form of recognizing biogenic carbon emissions. We believe the concept of avoided emissions is paramount and that the FPFO should stress wildfire mitigation as a key forestry practice. To accomplish this task, the FPFO needs a strategic lens when it comes to fire. Thankfully, the department is in the beginning stages of developing its 20-year strategic plan, which is going to focus on developing a strategy to implement landscape resiliency across the state. The plan is outlined in the MOU on shared stewardship and is to be modeled after the Washington State's 20-year Forest Health Strategic Plan. As AOL sees it, this plan will strive to set forth an implementable long-term strategy to achieve the mitigation subcommittee recommendations of the Governor's Council on Wildfire Response, while also seeking to restore and manage forested landscapes in the face of primary disturbances like insect infestation and drought. This 20-year plan does not need to be complicated by addressing long-term strategies for fire-adapted communities nor wildfire response, because Senate Bill 762 expressly sought to implement those recommendations of the Governor's Wildfire Council. To address these recommendations, the plan should seek maximum effectiveness of forest health treatments at a pace and scale commensurate with the risk we face. It should do this by leveraging commercial timber value to increase non-commercial and restoration activities. Thank you.
Thank you, testimony providers. We really appreciate your participation this morning, and you're welcome to stay in the Zoom meeting for the remainder of item one. However, we just ask that you remain muted and disengage your video unless called upon by the board. So Chair Kelly and members of the board, this concludes our public testimony portion.
Okay, thank you, Hillary. All right. Today we have the honor of having Congressman Earl Blumenauer joining the board today. As a state legislator and local government leader and member of Congress, Earl Blumenauer has dedicated more than four decades to public service. He started his career while still a college student working to lower the voting age, both in Oregon and at the national level. I think I benefited because that just changed when I turned 18. And so I registered to vote and promptly got called to a month's worth of jury duty. So thank you, Congressman. So he, during his career, he has worked as an Oregon State Legislator, a Multnomah County Commissioner, a Portland City Commissioner, and now for some time, he's been our congressman representing Portland, much of Portland and in that area. He has developed a national reputation for his advocacy on environmental protection, land use planning, public transportation, and innovation to create more livable communities. In Congress, he has focused his efforts on making the federal government an effective partner in protecting our public lands and addressing the climate crisis. Congressman Blumenauer is currently leading congressional efforts to improve community resilience in the face of climate disasters like catastrophic wildfires and his Climate Resilience Act. Congressman is also a strong advocate for agricultural policy that is more sustainable for both people and the planet. He has led progressive efforts to reform the federal farm bill with legislation like his Food and Farm Act. The Congressman is a leading advocate for rebuilding and renewing our nation's crumbling infrastructure. He authored several measures in the recently passed bipartisan infrastructure law, including the tax on petrochemicals to ensure polluters are paying for the cleanup of Superfund sites. He also advocated for the funding of for power infrastructure, public transit, passenger rail, bridge repair, clean drinking water and wastewater, high-speed internet, clean energy, transmission, EV infrastructure, and grid deployment authority to build a clean 21st century electric grid. Tires me out just reading all of that. Welcome, Congressman Blumenauer. Are you with us?
Chair Kelly, this is Board Administrator Hillary Leibowitz-Rood. At this point, he is still in transit, so he'll be, I believe, joining us in about 7 minutes. So apologies for the delay, but he's got a very tight schedule. We can offer to have a quick break until they join. If not, if you'd like to return to any board comments or state forester comments.
Unless there's a board, anyone has any comments at this point, then I would suggest that we take a short break. And so you said that he is 7 minutes away. Is that correct?
Yeah, yes, we're negotiating Eastern versus Pacific Standard Time. So
All right. Let's take a short break, and convene at 9:15.
Thank you. Jim, if you could go ahead and do one more. Oh, we just lost him.
Hillary, yeah, it looks like he's having some technical difficulties. I think we should probably move forward.
I agree. Chair or State Forester Mokomoto, any questions or issues before?
Before?
Before reintroducing Mr. Blumenauer.
Oh, okay. I would love to do that. That'd be great. Do we need to reread the introduction at Jim Kelly? Okay. All right. Let me know when I should go.
Go ahead and proceed with the last paragraph. Then we can maybe Jim will be able to join us.
Okay. All right. Well, as we can see, Chair Kelly is having some internet connection problems. So I've got the honor to introduce Congressman Earl Blumenauer. And this is a very big honor. I understand that in Congress, he has focused his efforts on making the federal government an efficient partner in protecting our public lands and addressing the climate crisis. Congressman Blumenauer is currently leading congressional efforts to improve community resilience in the face of climate change disasters like the catastrophic wildfires with his Climate Resilience Act. The Congressman is also a strong advocate of agricultural policy that is more sustainable for both people and the planet. He has led progressive efforts to reform the federal farm bill, with his legislation like his Food and Farm Act. The Congressman is a leading advocate for rebuilding and renewing our nation's crumbling infrastructure. He authored several measures in the recently passed bipartisan infrastructure law, including the tax on petrochemicals to ensure polluters are paying for cleanup of Superfund sites. He also advocated for funding for power infrastructure, public transit, passenger rail bridge repair, clean drinking water and wastewater, high-speed internet, clean energy transmission, EV infrastructure, grid deployment authority to build a clean 21st century electric grid. Congressman Blumenauer, welcome. And I understand that you would like to address the board and offer some time for them to ask questions.
Yes. Well, it is an honor for me to join you. I was just referencing with board member Carla Chambers, that I think what you're doing is one of the most critical roles that any Oregonians can fulfill. Forestry is part of our heritage. It's a critical part of our landscape. It's key to our being able to meet our environmental challenges. It is a cornerstone for the economy in many communities. And it's been a source of, I don't have to tell you, modest controversy over the years. I got my introduction when I chaired the Revenue and School Finance Committee in the Oregon Legislature, I think back before any of you were born. But in that role, chairing the committee, I was right in the middle of issues that dealt with timber tax, the Western Oregon ad valorem compromise that we were able to develop, small woodlot tax, dealing with making a transition from an outmoded ad valorem system that actually incented people to cut more rapidly in a way that was more reckless. And destabilized revenues. And we were able to put together on a bipartisan basis legislation that was enacted and until recently things started to unspool, I think served us well. But it gave me an appreciation for the complexity and the importance and particularly your role. I come somewhat humbly because the federal government has not always been your best partner dealing with forest management, including insane policies to not allow emergency funding dealing with disasters and cannibalizing the Forest Service budget. I'm hopeful we've turned that corner, but there are untold opportunities in terms of stewardship of federal land, the partnerships that you embody in terms of people who manage and own forests, Native Americans, state and local government, people who care deeply about the environment, water. I mean, this is, you touch everything and not just in rural and small town. It affects us all. So I want to express my deep appreciation for your service. I know that you're working hard to move forward in a time of some contention. We still have challenges. You know, it's frustrating to me. And I was in the Oregon legislature when we passed Senate Bill 100 and thinking about the land use implications that today the most rapidly growing area of development in the United States is in the rural-urban interface. Just nuts. And that represents a failure on a number of fronts. But again, Oregon is trying to move forward on that. So I wanted to express my appreciation, my interest in being able to work with you to unspool some of these. Recently, I've been involved with legislation that would deal with the federal response to disasters. You know, FEMA has not been charged with dealing with extreme heat or extreme cold or dealing with the air quality implications that you're well aware of with our forest fires. We need a reset in terms of what the federal government does to be a better partner. We want to make sure that the infrastructure, the gusher of infrastructure money that is coming forward, and the fact that in part because of the federal partnership, the state has some choices to invest. We want to make sure that we make the most of it. Including that broadband that we all live on. Maybe Jim got caught up on some of the broadband issues. This is life and death for rural and small town. It's critical for education and how we conduct public business. So let me just stop at this point with my thanks, my interest in being able to work with you in the year ahead to make the most out of the opportunities we have now and going forward. And I'd be happy to entertain questions. I'd be very interested in comments and advice that you would offer me.
Congressman, this is Jim. I'd like to go first. I think my computer blew up probably because I was so excited that you were coming to the Board of Forestry. We've known each other for a long time. I think, wasn't I in grade school when you were on the city council? Seriously.
Rub it in, Jim, rub it in. Yeah, true.
Yeah, true, of course. You know, one of our biggest challenges is our financial stability. I'm speaking of ODF. And really our biggest problem is this large fire funding and the fact that with the various federal agencies, FEMA, Forest Service, BLM, that we typically wait 2 years for reimbursements. And so that has created huge cash flow issues for us, and we are likely going to be working with the legislature to fix it. But you know, it really, you know, there's really a federal responsibility.
Yes,
I can't imagine how we can just fix overnight the way the bureaucracy of approving these kinds of payments. But we cannot be alone as an agency out there that is put in this kind of position, waiting. Is there any possibility, any way to potentially address this, that there can be some sort of process or for some upfront monies to agencies like ours? I mean, when you are talking this many millions of dollars for a department like ours, it's caused us huge problems.
Yeah. Well, you are right, Mr. Chairman. It is a problem that is not just Oregon, but our partners in the West, and increasingly federal payments dealing with fire-related disaster are spiraling upward. And I think it's quite clear that it's not just us. I would love to work with you to assemble a Zoom call, dare I say, with some of your Western partners and a few of my colleagues who represent Washington and California, as well as Oregon. And for us to be able to deal with Secretary Vilsack, for instance, to be able to raise these questions and deal with an opportunity to help people manage these costs. We're not going to have an exact accounting, and there are probably responsibilities that need to occur in terms of making sure that every dollar is appropriately accounted for. But I will tell you that what you're talking about is rounding error compared to other areas. So I would hope that we could bring people together to talk about ways to be able to do some advanced funding. We're coming into another fire season. We know it's going to be hundreds of billions of dollars that are going to be in play. And for these states, hundreds of millions of dollars dealing with our response in helping you deal with the fires. I would think we ought to be able to get ahead of this curve, have something that would have bipartisan support and not circumvent necessary protections. But for heaven's sakes, we'll spend more time arguing over details than if we were able to get a significant portion of money out the door, helping you deal with the challenge and be able to do it more effectively and sooner. It would probably save money. And I'd love to work with you to put together that conversation with some members of Congress and some of people in your sister organizations. It's a great point.
Okay, I see Carl making notes, so we will take you up on that offer. And I see Board Member Carla Chambers has a question.
Congressman, we really appreciate your leadership in this area. I love your upfront dollar and offensive thinking. We've burned almost 4 million acres in Oregon in just the last 6 years. And we only have 29 million acres of total forests, about half of our land base. But in the last 2 years, we've spent $260 million on large fire, which is a little over half of our Oregon Department of forestry.
Carla, what was that number again? 200?
We've spent $130 million a year, $260 million in 2 years, almost half of our Oregon Department of Forestry budget. The Wildfire Council recommended that we mitigate 4.7 million high-risk acres over 20 years, although over 10 would be better. And I, you know, you look at that FEMA dollar, which is the last dollar spent after the disaster occurs.
Yes.
And moving, the only way we get ahead of that curve is to spend that dollar on early offense.
Yes.
And I wondered if you'd just talk a minute about, you know, U.S. Forest Service and BLM have really gotten behind the curve here on some forest management practices. Yes. Can you talk about some changes that we're going to see, hopefully, on these Western lands?
Well, Carla, it just pains me when I think of how much money we spend on failure.
Yeah.
Every dollar of mitigation saves us $5 to $10 further downstream. We all know and acknowledge it, but we're sort of trapped in a process, and they all had probably a reason when they were put in place. In some cases, we're talking about not just years, but decades ago.
Yeah.
And this is something that I have, been working with Governor Kitzhaber on, thinking about ways that we can do a better job of not wasting money on failure. Being able to accelerate money that we know is going to be spent, but accelerate it to spend it in a timely fashion to reduce damage and further expenditures. And I will say that this is a broad application. I mean, I think of people that we see on our streets in communities large and small. We end up probably paying more to deal with their healthcare and law enforcement and courts, and you know, than if we actually invested upfront to try and help them. And certainly, as a result of natural disaster, the money would be so well spent to be able to help you manage these forests, and for the federal government to do a better job of its management. So I could not agree with you more. It's part of what I've done. I put out a report dealing with the federal policies and disaster, which I'll be happy to share with you. But I have pieces of legislation to try and implement this. And I'm finding some members on both sides of the aisle who are scratching their heads and saying, well, yeah, this doesn't have to be World War III. This is something that we ought to come together on. And I think if we can move dealing with this particular area, dealing with wildfires that are predictable, that are destructive, that have such an impact on our communities, everything from the Shakespeare Festival to wine to agriculture. And, you know, I came home 2 years ago, having been in the East, to the worst air quality in the world in my hometown of Portland, as the smoke drifted up. So I could not agree with you more. I would love to continue that conversation with you. I know you have very strong feelings about ways that would make a difference. And I hope that we're able to focus on the cost of failure. I'm tired of spending on failure. I'd like to be able to get ahead of this curve. It will cost us no more. And I think it will be the signal of the opportunities that we face. And you don't have time for me to go on a rant, but it's an area that I'd love to have further conversation, because we're dealing with climate policy, opportunities to be able to deal with our forest policies properly, opportunities in terms of water. You know, half of Oregon relies on water coming from our forests. I mean, these are areas that I think can build momentum to actually solve our problems. And I would love to explore this further. And I welcome any specific examples you have about ways that we're wasting money dealing with failure rather than trying to get ahead of the curve. There's nothing, Carla, that I think is more important than what you just raised.
Okay, Congressman, we have another board member, Joe Justice, who's like to ask a question.
Yeah, Congressman, thank you very much for speaking with us today. I'm Joe Justice. I'm a forester, and I've lived in Oregon my whole life, and I currently live in La Grande, Oregon. So, you know, when Carla and everybody talks about the fires that are happening in Eastern Oregon, I see the columns, I see the smoke. I see what's happening. I guess I just have a comment about urgency related to this restoration. We are losing the infrastructure. We are losing the tools actively to conduct restorations on these federal lands. And that's the sad fact that I see. We're losing. I manage a land base in Northeast Oregon, 275,000 acres of private timberlands that I manage on behalf of Manulife Forest Management. And it's a struggle here. The logging infrastructure, the milling infrastructure, that all of these things that are going to need to be used in order to do restoration on federal lands, and the millions of acres. And as a forester, I go and I see these federal lands, and it makes me sad, frankly, to see the conditions of so many of the acres of federal lands that are burning, that are in just conditions, horrible forest health conditions that need tremendous restoration. And I know the future of them. They will burn. And I also am just terribly concerned about the urgency by which this can happen, that we can actually tackle this problem, that we have the people, we have the machine in place to do it. So really, Congressman, that's my concern from somebody who lives here, who sees it, that experiences it, that is really, as an Oregonian, I'm just terribly concerned about our federal lands and what the future really holds for them. But thank you for coming. Thank you for your interest in this. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you for your observation. It's kind of disturbing to take a helicopter ride, particularly in Eastern Oregon, looking at the difference. You can just tell those that are privately managed and those that are in the stewardship of the federal government. It's embarrassing, and it's wrong. So I agree with you about urgency, but I hope that this is something that we can continue a conversation trying to build momentum, because there are people in Congress in both parties who I think understand that and I think could work with us to try and thread this needle. It's going to save money in the long run.
Yeah, Congressman, as Joe was pointing out, the importance of keeping this mill infrastructure in Eastern Oregon, and this is really an interesting one, because this is something that a lot of environmental groups recognize how important, are very supportive of trying to keep the mills open in the part of Oregon where Joe is, or down in Lakeview. So we have a lot of opportunity there when we have industry and environmentalists all singing the same song. I think Brenda had her hand up. Brenda McComb.
Yeah, thank you, Jim. Brenda McComb for the record. Congressman Blumenauer, thank you so much for being here today. I certainly don't want to disagree with my fellow board members, Carla and Joe, but it does become an issue of balance, right? I mean, we do need the infrastructure to restore some of these forest lands to what they might have been previously, but more importantly, to create opportunities for these forests to be resistant to and resilient from future fires, because we know they're going to burn, while at the same time honoring the Clean Water Act, the Clean Air Act, and the Endangered Species Act. So I think that the I appreciate the direction that the conversation's going, but I do hope that we don't throw the baby out with the bathwater here when we're trying to resolve a problem that we may see on federal lands, but it has to be balanced with other priorities.
Well, we're Oregon, and we're not going to short circuit important environmental goals and protections. But that said, I think we can identify areas that where there are people coming in. What Jim was just saying about the recognition that the infrastructure, the mills represent. I think there's a convergence that is occurring. I love the material that Governor Kitzhaber has put together dealing with the future of forestry in Oregon. I thought it was very helpful material. I think there is a consensus that is emerging. We saw it play out in this Oregon legislature, where it wasn't World War III, where people came together on some reasonable legislation and made some progress. And not everybody was 100% satisfied, but I count that as an important achievement. And I think we can build on this. And you're in the vortex here. You have a difficult job. You're balancing all sorts of challenges, economic, environmental, and indeed, I will say social and political. But I would like to be counted as an ally who would like to learn from you, understand the challenges that you face. I bleed green. I am a very strong environmentalist. I've been involved with this legislation forever. But I also will say that I was able to craft proposals in the Oregon legislature that were true to the environmental values and were able to build consensus to move things forward. I think we can do that. The stakes are so high. The cost of failure is so extreme. And I think we're watching people understand this dynamic in a way that I think there's an opportunity. I truly do. And I don't want to be Pollyannish, but I would like to be counted as an ally to think this through and take your advice on ways that the federal government can be the partner you deserve and Oregonians need.
Thank you.
All right, any other questions for the congressman? Doesn't look like it. Great. Congressman, thank you so much for taking the time to see us. We will follow up with you. We all really appreciate it.
Thank you for your service. I mean, this there was a joke by some of the members about how much time you're spending on this instead of family and business and getting off Zoom calls. This is an important role that you play, and I appreciate the sacrifice you're making to try and do it right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.